Hi folks, Jack Black again with this occasional series of podcasts. Always my pleasure to have a chat. This is a blather with a good Mindstorm member. And what do I mean by that? Well, someone who over the years has shown up at courses, their presence has supported me. They may not always be aware of that, but just to see their faces there, their enthusiasm, and by and large them being there for newcomers who might sit with them by chance and ask a question or get support. And I'm forever grateful for that. And I got to know quite a few of you guys over the years. You come down the front, you have a chat, or I've worked with you in your companies, whatever it may be, and we've got a reasonable relationship. And one guy, a fantastic relationship with, someone I really trust and someone who I've had lots of wonderful conversations with and who's attended lots of stuff, is Andy Smith. And he's a really special guy. He's a great Mindstorm member, and many of you know him through being involved in one or two of the Facebook groups. You're well aware of him, but others, you've probably met him. You don't quite. He's got one of these guys. He walks into a room and he's got presence. So you must have at least noticed him if you've not had the privilege of chatting with him. So today, my guest is Andy. Andy, it's wonderful to have you here, and thanks for giving us your time.
Jack, it's an absolute pleasure, and thank you for the most wonderful words. I mean, that means a lot coming from you, and hopefully, as we chat through, maybe I'll reciprocate a wee bit with just a wee bit of evidence around what you've given to me. As I've been on my journey over the last, I just worked it out, it's 22 years, I think, that I've been sort of engaging with all the things that you've taught me. So, thank you for inviting me along. I'm very honoured and very humbled to do so.
Yeah, it's very kind of you, Andy. It really is, and I'm sure people enjoy your blather. Well, what we do with this is we kind of kick off with your Mindstorm credentials, if that's the right term. You've said already you're good 20 years ago when you popped up. So tell me a wee bit about that, your first course, where it was, what course, what other courses you've done. I know you've done quite a lot of things with us, and I've been involved with you professionally as well. So if you want to share some of that with the guys, it'll let them know that you've got a bit of a background with us, which is nice.
Yeah, no, really happy to do that. I think it was either 1996 or 1997, I think I first came across you. And I guess, like many people at the time, I attended one of the open sessions. I think it was a Canary Wharf. Yeah. I was in a room probably with about a couple of thousand people, and I didn't really know what I was getting into. I was kind of sent on a course by my work. I was working for a big pharmaceutical company at the time, and went along with some colleagues, and to be fair, was blown away. I wasn't really sure what I was expecting, and we had some challenges to deal with it in the work environment, and I was genuinely shocked with what I came away with in terms of just the house on the red roof, and you know, being able to understand how to kind of use my brain space in probably a different way. And yeah, and I think over the subsequent years, there was, you know, various different courses I'd attended. I think probably if we fast forward 10 years, just to kind of chronologize, I suppose, my journey with Mindstorm, I think the Island was another significant event for me. Yeah. At quite a challenging time personally for me, and it was one of those weekends that I, to be honest, it was, you know, genuinely life changing. Some of the inspirations that I drew, some of the coincidences that I was kind of open to, genuinely changed my life and set it in a completely different direction. Mm-hmm. After that, I did your year-long master's course, and that was again phenomenal. While I was on that course, I was up for a big industry award. Yeah. And you know, if anybody has any doubt that any of the Mindstorm techniques work, I remember stood there accepting this award that I wanted so dearly for so long, and I'd programmed, and I remember standing there and getting very emotional as I held the trophy in my hands, and realizing that I'd been there probably 100 times before in my own mind, was quite a shocking thing to experience. And I'm not sure even if many Mindstorm members have kind of experienced this, but it's quite an interesting experience when you kind of think if you want something badly enough and you kind of follow the process, that it comes to pass in a way that you'd actually wished for is quite an extraordinary thing. And I guess you and I have worked together. I've had you in front of some of my customers in subsequent roles, and I've always sort of stayed in touch with the Mindstorm methodology. What I'm doing now, in terms of which I think is born out of an innate sort of desire to help others. I think everything that you've taught me, introduced me to, things like tapping and stuff like that, is kind of riddled all the way through it. And I credit you immensely with putting me in a position where I can put my own sort of spin on things and apply it in a way that I think is helpful to others. And even my teenage daughter, who has been a sort of a guinea pig and exposed to the different Mindstorm things probably for about the last sort of 10 years or so, and not really fully understanding what she was doing with tapping and things like that, but she had a challenging situation even just a few months ago and said, can we do some tapping, because she knows this kind of stuff works, and visualization and working with energy and things like that. So just a wonderful journey for me, and you've taught me loads, Jack, and I am for which I will be eternally grateful.
Well, I'm grateful, Andy, for you turning up, because it's stalwarts like yourself that show up, especially when I'm doing what you're doing. You risk yourself when you launch a program, and if I put a new program out, you don't know how that audience is going to take it. And a lot of people want to get the old familiar. They love the House of the Red Roof, and they don't want anything else, or the Islanders, and they don't really want the House of the Red Roof. Or, it's interesting. But you've always tended to show up at these other events, and when people like you come in and you give me the non-verbal communication back sometimes, or come out and say hello, that really encourages me, and I've always been grateful for your presence. So wait, when you did the island, which one was that? Where was that one?
That was in London at the Meridian in Piccadilly.
Oh, yes, I remember that one.
April 2006, maybe sometime around
Bruce
that.
Bruce was with me that day. I think he was just learning about it at that point. I remember he was with me that day, those 2 days. That was pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it really was. I mean, the walk and the coincidences. Yeah. I likened it. I think I actually stood up when we all came back in the room, and I said it was a bit like the universe just got a great big baseball bat out and just hit me about five times in a row and said, you need to listen to this. And I was I remember thinking, okay, enough. I get it. I understand. And because I got the same message, whether it was something that was on the side of a bus, or it was a traffic signal that I'd never sign that I'd never really read in that way before, a movie poster, an advert for Red Bull. Yeah. It was just bang, 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 things in succession, and it was quite extraordinary, to be honest.
Now, what I remember you sharing, and I remember also, for me the big risk with that particular course was, and is, we did it as a pop up in Glasgow. Back in November, an opportunity came up, a series of coincidences. The venue was called the Lighthouse. How could I refuse it? And, off we did, and we had a great course. But the thing about that particular course is you really need to have an ability to open up your right brain and trust your intuition. And in the face of it, when someone might meet you, or you think about the kind of roles you've played in terms of business life and stuff, there's a very talented left brain guy there. But equally, the ability for you to open up your right brain is really what's wonderful. And I think, for people like yourself who had the comfort of just, let's go out and go for this walk and see what happens and open up, get extraordinary results. And yet, there's some people sitting in the same room, their left brain gets so much in the way, even if the universe is hitting them with the baseball bat in their face, they're just not going to hear it or see it. They're so blocked. That's a minority of people, but it's always so sad when you see them. And then if, you know, more recently we, well, not more recently, but another thing you and I are involved with was the Next Step program, or the extreme mindfulness, where we're doing really advanced stuff with our minds, projecting our minds to different locations and getting information. And again, you know, people who get the opportunity to do that, and you just, the left brain pops in and just blocks them, and yet others who just say, look, left brain, shut up for a moment, let me experience this, just get unbelievable results. So you've been one of those guys that just kind of helped me. If I teach a course like that for the first time, and you're sitting in the audience or someone like you, and you're getting it, then I know I've got it, and I was ever so grateful for you. And you have no idea how risky it was, because the first time I did the island was in Glasgow, and it was in the big pavilion theatre. There was about 1,500 people there. It was sold out, and you know, sending people out on a course for a 40-minute back then 40-minute walk, and expecting them to come back was fairly risky, you'll appreciate. And not only would they go out and come back, more importantly, if they went out, would it work? And I had no idea. I mean, I knew it was working for me when I was walking through cities or whatever and just opening up, you know, because I'd experimented with it. But would the public get it? Would mindful people get it? And, of course, they just did. It was awesome, and it really blew me away. And what a privilege it was to see the lights going all over the theatre. And then for you to come to London and feedback as well. So Mindstore and all its different guises has been important to you, and I'm grateful for you sharing that.
I think as well, just coming back to you on that, Jack, I think I suppose my own personal experience has been one of kind of progression through it, you know. And again, you know, I was somebody who was probably sat there. You know, there was, I think somebody, when I was in my first course, there was somebody that I was there with had been on one of your courses before, and they were kind of gleefully looking at me, kind of going, oh, just wait, it's going to be great. And I was kind of one of those guys who was probably metaphorically sitting back in the chair with my arms folded, kind of thinking, all right, sunshine, impress me. And you did, you know, and I think, if I think about my journey, I think you do kind of start off with there's a degree of, I think, trust that has to be built and rapport. Yeah. But your mind doesn't necessarily, some people, I think, and I think especially nowadays compared to maybe 20 years ago, people are much more generally receptive. We use terms like mindfulness almost like a kind of an everyday word now, whereas I think before, you know, it was... it was just for the, you know, the new age thinkers or the hippies or whatever, however you wanted to kind of stereotype them. But and I think there probably still is a degree of people to kind of, you know, dip their toe into this stuff and then kind of understand, you know, you almost have to work out the power of it for yourself. I mean, going back to that example that I used with regards to the getting the award, you know, I mean, it's, and I'm sure people will listen to this and kind of go, yeah, well, that's all very well and it sounds all very nice. But I think unless you've actually experienced it for yourself, you don't really fully understand the power of it, because it's only when you start actually practicing some of this stuff and you kind of, you get a little bit of feedback, you go, oh, well, that's interesting. And then you maybe try it a bit more. And then you kind of, you start to get a sense of the kind of the infinite power of some of this stuff, that actually the more you do it, the more you get, then it really is quite extraordinary. But I guess if I just talk about it personally, there was probably a kind of a learning curve that I went through. And now, you know, yes, exactly, with the kind of the extreme mindfulness and things like that, it's it probably is a little out there for some people, but it's, that doesn't mean to say that it's not for everybody. It's just, I think as a race almost, we are kind of progressing towards understanding more of this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, my experience though is even, you know, it's interesting, so I'm really grateful for you saying it, because, you know, I've had people in the audiences, especially at those extreme mindfulness courses, or as we used to call it, the Next Step, and they're sitting there, they're a small minority, they're terrified to do it because it freaks them out. They think that can't be possible. or this, they have this tremendous sense of responsibility because of what we're specifically doing, they feel it's a step too far. And you sit there and everybody else is getting blown away and they're watching it but don't really understand what's happening because they're not experiencing it. They can hear it, but it doesn't make any sense because it doesn't make any sense when you hear it. You've got to do it. And then if we've got more time and I sit down and I say, well, let me do it with you. And like, because they trust me or they wouldn't be in the room in the first place. They wouldn't have lasted till 4:30 in the afternoon. But then I take them through it. Everybody does it. You know, yeah. And I've done this with guys, literally guys offshore on an oil rig who've got their, you know, their backside hanging out, their jeans, characters right through to people who are struggling with drug abuse and, you know, executives of major international companies. It doesn't matter who they are. We've all got this ability. We're all connected. And as I quite like to say from time to time, there's only one of us here anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for you sharing that. So maybe in terms of just the listeners here, they'll realise that you're kind of one of us. You know, I suspect people listen to this, one of us as well. You know, they're into what we're doing. Yeah. They know what we're getting at here about the power of this. Is there any particular tool or technique that there's a favourite that you like to use or you find kind of almost it's just part of your life now?
I would say, I guess I was an exponent of the house with the red roof, yeah. The house on the right bank, and having my boardroom, yeah. Has been, and I know I've tried many times to get on the Whispering with Giants, yes. And I will manage one of these days, Jack. But you know, I think for me, probably the biggest thing has been to kind of understand the kind of the landscape inside your own imagination. Yeah. And you know, I use my island, and I've developed my island. And my house on the right bank, probably in ways that you know, weren't your intention, but I've just, as needs must, to be able to go and create a new room. I have a wonderful cave on my island, yep. Where I have like a big thing out of a 1930s sci-fi movie with all sorts of dials and wonderful things and knobs and switches and things that I use to kind of manage my own sort of emotions and situation. And so I would say, you know, just that whole ability to go into alpha, yeah. and have a kind of a purpose behind it and a structure I have found to be exceptional. The other thing, obviously, you introduced me to thought field therapy and tapping, and you and I worked with Roger when, yeah. He came to London that time that Ed set up, and my signed copy of Tapping the Healer Within is still one of my most treasured possessions. Yeah. And again, you know, it's one of these things that, and I've done that for clients in the stuff I'm doing now. And I find myself trying to explain it and justify it and say, look, you know, you just have to suspend your disbelief a little bit on this because it looks a bit nuts, yeah. But when you do it and you feel it working, yeah. Then all of a sudden, then you get it. And it's just going back to what you were saying, you know, I think the just getting people to just take that first step is probably the hardest bit, because the when you start to experience the sort of tools and techniques that you're teaching, then it kind of gathers its own momentum, and your desire to learn more about it kind of takes over a bit, I would have said.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you've said there, which is really, really, for people listening again, just always something I want to reinforce, is you used, you know, getting into alpha. You know, when I started out and I realised I had this kind of ability to work with an audience and get them to at least listen, if I had good material, it would help them. You know, there was a lot of motivational, and I'd spent 6 months, there was no internet back then, so I was going to courses, I was reading books and stuff, and it was very clear I could make a living out of just standing in stages and doing motivational stuff. And the bit that wasn't sexy, if as it were, was to get the audience to stop and close their eyes and do a head-to-toe relaxation and maybe fall asleep and snore or drool down the side of their mouths. But way back then, they all thought I was hypnotising them anyway, or I was brainwashing them. And it wasn't like, as you said today, with mindfulness being a household word. and universities all around the world, you know, coming into this space and legitimizing it. I didn't have any of that at the beginning. You know, I could have easily not gone anywhere near alpha, you know, not gone anywhere near relaxing and meditating and stuff. But in fact, the whole secret of the success is in fact alpha. And I'm so glad that I kept at that and I took the risk to do that when it would have been easier just to do a motivational story and, you know, give them some left brain type techniques. But I'm so glad that I stuck to it and got through it, because all these years later and all the stuff we've done with it, and other people are doing with it too, is that it's a gift that we've been given. We're born with it. It's extraordinary. It's beyond normal thought processes. It's non-ordinary. It's totally amazing, powerful beyond measure. And having people like yourself, you know, go and discover it. And as you quite rightly say, I mean, the thing about the island and the thing about the House of the Red Roof was, and the landscape around it, was to say, look, you know, you can build your own rooms here. You can go in that landscape and find stuff. And people have and done that, and it's been wonderful. I mean, I've continued to explore it, you know, as well. That's the thing. I've got other rooms I haven't shared with people yet, and maybe one day we will. But so the alpha thing's really important. Well, how do you go on with, you know, and because when I was working with you with your clients, you know, when we were working together corporately kind of thing, I mean, one of the things obvious was that you're a busy guy. You were a busy guy then, you're busy now, but you're in a different place. We'll maybe talk about that in a moment. But I mean, what about getting the time? What about the discipline to turn up early pre-program or in the middle of a working day? Did you find that easier? Was that something that was a bit more challenging to do? Because a lot of people listening here will have the thing, oh, I need to get back to it, I need to do it. And yeah, it's getting them over that hump, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I would love to be sitting here as a, you know, an exponent of, yeah, every morning I jump in bed, go into alpha and all this, you know. Yeah. And, you know, that's not how my life runs in anything, to be honest, in terms of kind of a routine kind of guy. However, I probably practice it more than many, I'm sure. Yeah. And I think it's been one of those things. I think, again, just going back to the kind of chronology of it, I think it was probably, I think I left that first course feeling excited and enthused, but it probably took me about 6 months to kind of work out where I was going to kind of use this. And and it was only, you know, life kind of comes along, gives you a nudge, and you think, oh, hang on a minute, I can, you know, I should maybe try this to help cope with that and things like that. And I think you kind of find your own sort of path with it. But I certainly, these days, I think when I'm in a creative phase and kind of starting a business from scratch is certainly that. I think, you know, I would say I become far more reliant on the time that I do spend in alpha, because that is when the real inspiration comes, you know, the creative forces and the ideas. And it's funny, one of the things I find is when I'm exercising, if I'm doing something like swimming, for example, I now have to keep a notebook. I bought myself a waterproof notebook off Amazon to go and keep at the side of the pool, because I literally could not keep up with the things that would come when I would just get into that alpha state, even while I was doing physical exercise, which is
one of the places that naturally comes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I was shocked that, I really, you know, I would literally get out the pool with a, you know, two or three pages worth of stuff. And yeah, I don't know, maybe it was my way of subconsciously just wanting to take a break, but, yeah, you know, just things that you were like, wow, where did that come from? You know, that genuine kind of intuitive, you know, almost shocking yourself. I mean, I've had a number of different experiences with, using the boardroom that I have in there. So the kind of Whispers with Giants type, side of things. And genuinely some of the things I've had have been quite shocking. And I've thought, okay, I would never have come up with that by myself if I was not actually, you know, in alpha, you know, projecting through other people or my higher self. And you sometimes you need to do that in order to access this kind of higher level of intuition. Yeah. And that's been massively powerful as I've you know, you almost become your own coach in a way. Yeah. as I've gone through the kind of creation of the business. Yeah. And you know, don't do that or do this, and why are you putting that off, and you know, what were you thinking? It's extraordinary what you tap into when you get into that state.
Again, you're hitting all the right notes for me here, because again, it's just from you. It's because you're you know, an experienced mind store member, in the sense that you've longevity of it, still using it to the degree that you do. You still show up at courses. You're engaging with me regularly in social media, which I'm grateful for. And here we are having a podcast together. But the thing is, this whole thing about getting in touch with your intuition and obviously accessing it by both the alpha level, and when you get into a rhythm of swimming, into the rhythm of cycling, into the rhythm of jogging, your brain drifts into alpha anyway, and these are great moments to have these, to allow the flow to come from whatever the source is, and we can spend hours exploring what the source might be, but nevertheless, it's coming from somewhere, and it's coming into your awareness, and it's delivered through that conduit of both the alpha level, but what I love what you said was the notion of using the Whispers with Janks type concepts, or rather, to be frank, the gift that Andrew Carnegie gave us all, because that was what he found, and he, as you know, was the richest guy that ever lived by today's standards, and gave 95% of it away, an extraordinary guy. But what, you know, from a standing start, sweeping out an office, the richest guy that ever lived, giving it all away, pretty cool dude. But the thing is, he shared with young Napoleon Hill what that secret was. And Napoleon in his book says, if you're ready for the secret of success, it'll bounce out at you from these pages. If not, you need to read the book again. And I've met, thousands of people literally over the years that read that book. And I've also, I've even worked with and been in touch with the people who actually teach that stuff on behalf of the foundation. And, you know, they admit it goes over their head. They miss it. They get all the logical stuff and all the systems that he's got there. But the bit about having those deep alpha conversations with the notion of inner coaches, whoever you want to call them, directors, counselors, all different names, but accessing a place and a methodology allows you to coach yourself from some intelligence that you can't access otherwise is fantastic. And I'm ever so grateful for you mentioning it, because it's like the ultimate tool. You know, we've got some amazing tools, of course we have, but to get in that flow, to have it delivered to you, for you to have a dialogue with the flow via the notion of coaches, it's just amazing. And as you know only too well, the ideas come, and all you got to do is, it's almost like all you got to do is just decide, look, I'm going to ask for them. And as long as the source gets a sense of you're serious, and if it gives you solutions or ideas, that you'll act on them, and obviously you're a man of action, you've done that, and you're building a business, you know, that it's always going to flow. What the source doesn't seem to like is someone playing with it, gets the information and doesn't act. You know, then it becomes a bit more of a kind of challenge from whatever the source is and what it's delivering. It starts to seem to dry up a bit.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I've experienced that myself, you know, if you do take action and you do respond to what you're getting, then it comes at you pretty thick and fast. And that in itself can feel a little overwhelming at times. When you're like, okay, I remember one thing, and I think I described it to you once. I felt like I shoved my fingers into a light socket. And when you feel like you've really tapped into something, you really get a sense of the momentum that you can build very quickly on it. And that is just it's a wonderful gift to experience.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, Andy, you've come quite a distance. You've left employment. You've had a go at doing different projects, I know, because we've talked about projects before. Yeah. And you're now engaged in I know from a conversation with you just a few weeks ago, quite an extraordinary, a wonderful place to find yourself working in. And to bring your experience and your backstory to it, to help people. Do you want to say a wee bit about that? Because I'm really inspired by this. I mean, I often, you know, I was saying to someone yesterday, you know, I get the opportunity to talk to and work with very, very successful people, and sometimes household names. And people, if they walked into a room, like I was talking about your presence, but if people walk into a room, they're instantly aware of them. You know, they do have a presence and they're seen as giants, or they're seen as, you know, heroes or whatever, and, or courageous people and so on. But to be honest, the men and women who I've worked with who are grappling with major challenges, unsung heroes, as it were, they're the real giants. They're the real heroes. You know, and some of them are, you know, just completely unheard of throughout their entire lives, but they conquer things that other people wouldn't be able to. And yep. And you're in that space of working, helping people with that. And I really, really admire you for doing it. Not everybody will go to that place to work, but you are. And I mean, could you share a bit with it? Because I'm sure people just love to hear your passion for it.
Okay. Well, you know, thanks for the opportunity to do that. I mean, so everything that we've been talking about over the last few minutes, I guess, is all well and good. But there's one kind of, I suppose, elephant in the room yep. that I was never really fully able to deploy my own mind store skills against. And I think for a whole variety of reasons, but that, or I grew up in a small island in the Shetland Islands, and that's an interesting kind of culture around alcohol. Yeah. And so I've been a fairly, well, very heavy drinker all my life, and been very successful. I think had, you know, always been kind of, you know, a part of the kind of the work hard, play hard, yeah. wine clock kind of brigade and things like that. And what I found was I think whenever I had any kind of challenging times in my life, that it was probably something that I relied on in a fairly kind of destructive fashion. And that came to a head probably around about just a little over a year ago. And I kind of said to myself, enough's enough. I need to try and make a bit of a change on this, because I was not happy with the amount that I was drinking, and I was not happy with the reasons why I was drinking as well. Yeah. And it kind of enabled me to kind of just, I suppose, really knuckle down. And there were a few very challenging things happening for me, and I just thought, you know what, I need to get really serious about this. And a lot of what I learned through Mindstore, and I just became a huge student around what was kind of going on yeah. for me, and I came to an answer. And to be honest, it was quite an extraordinary thing, and I thought, that's it, I'm done. I went from a place where I would say I was addicted and dependent on alcohol yeah. To kind of get me through, and it was gone. And you know, to wake up the following day and just go, yeah, I'm back in control of my life, was a truly extraordinary thing. And yeah. And I think, like anything, when you get a lot of change in your life, you kind of like, okay, well, let's see if this is a bit of a one-off and a bit of a fluke. And as the sort of weeks and months went on, I just thought, no, this is extraordinary. And everybody who knew me is, you know, big old Andy, always there with a glass in his hand, and you know, couldn't quite believe the change. And I thought, there's something in it. There's something in this that I'd been to see my GP. I'd had therapy and all this kind of stuff, and I'd been, you know, a fairly diligent person in terms of trying to get some answers, to cut down, to get back in control of it, and I finally found my answer, and nobody else had really seemed to be able to help me. And I thought, God, wouldn't it be nice if there was actually somebody that you could kind of turn to, that yeah. you know, knew what they were talking about, had been there, was not going to patronize you, was not going to judge you. So I set up a website and an online program called theboozemaster.com. And it and I recruited some volunteers, because I tried to reverse engineer what the process that I'd been through. And I'll be clear, you know, some of it was 10 years of dithering. You know, what does that actually look like in terms of coming to the conclusion? And it's a little bit of a parallel with what you were saying before around when people are unfamiliar or uncomfortable with kind of taking action around kind of mind store stuff. It's the same with this, you know, and there's all sorts of skepticism. Your mind plays all sorts of tricks on you around, am I worth this? And stuff. And I got some volunteers and they came back to me and just said, look, this is utterly extraordinary. The messages I get where people are saying that, you know, I've changed their lives and I haven't done anything. All I've done is, it's a bit like if you're playing poker, you actually have all the cards you need. You know, you're playing with a full deck of cards, but if you don't know what a royal flush looks like, then you're never going to win a hand. And that's all I kind of say to people is, it may be using everything that I've learned and the experience that I've been through, and also what I've learned that you've taught me, Jack, is kind of to put it into a kind of process for people to follow, to get kind of clear about why you want to make a change. And so much of it is about kind of dealing with your own comfort zone as well. Yeah. And what do you do if your comfort zone is not comfortable? This is one of the things I say to people is, you know, you're kind of stuck in a rut or whatever it looks like, but your mind, your body plays all sorts of tricks to stop you changing. And how do you push on through? And I think, again, just going back over what we've been talking, I think that's a very uncomfortable position. You know, if you're the kind of person, I've always been somebody who's pushed myself and driven myself, and to be operating at the edge of your comfort zone all the time is tough and it's hard. And you sometimes do develop some fairly poor strategies at kind of coping with the stress of that. For me, the program is around kind of a fairly robust, this is the kind of truth of the situation, but done in a way with a bit of humor and some credibility around, this is what is really going on. And that's a 7-day program. And then I have 100 days of follow-up where people can kind of adjust to a kind of a new reality. Because I think a lot of people that I'm dealing with, they just kind of go, you know, I'm in a rut. I feel like I'm not in control of the drink. The drink's controlling me. But I just don't know what the future looks like without it. And that's it's an awful place to be. And to give people hope is just the most special thing that I've ever done. Yeah. And some of the emails I get, you talk about, you know, a risk. And some of your experience, Jack, and it's interesting. I mean, I have a Facebook page and things like that. And of course, people can write whatever they want on there. And it's funny, you know, I had one post, I think I must have had about 1,000 positive comments on it about my journey in terms of what I'd done. And I'm now in July, I'm riding the whole course of the Tour de France. Yeah. And it's my kind of personal celebration of what I can do if I'm not, you know, if I'm not drinking. And all these messages of support, and then I get one guy that'll come and, you know, question my motives and things like that. And, you know, literally a sleepless night, you know, or just fretting about, oh my God, you know. And again, you know, going back into my boardroom where, you know, you get people who will say to you, you know, what on earth are you thinking? Why are you getting so upset about this? You know, just look at it on the whole, your balance of stuff. You're doing an amazing thing. You're inspiring a lot of people. You're giving people hope where they didn't have hope. And this guy has written a comment. He may well have been drunk when he did it. And all of a sudden it's all seems like it's falling apart. And, you know, your bell jar and things like that are all these kind of techniques that you sometimes have to bring to bear. Again, you know, I was right at the edge of my comfort zone, and I know what I do can help people. And I want to get the message out there. And it's a bit insulting when somebody does kind of question your motives, but people will, you know, and you have no control over that. And developing a degree of resilience around that is really, really important.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, again, thanks for sharing that story, but it was, you know, only is one of us here, so people will identify with that. I mean, one of the great sort of early on coaches of mine encouraging me to stand up on my feet and, you know, stand in front of an audience and just share your ideas, particularly doing introductory talks to sell mind stories, as it were, to an audience, or encourage them to come and book.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said, you know, a person might get up and walk out. And you have to learn to focus on the 99 that are still sat there, not the one that's walked out. And 9 times out of 10, the reason they walked out is because they need the loo.
Yes.
And they're going to come back. But you, but if you've not experienced about dealing with these things, then you can completely lose it at that point.
Yeah, that's really true.
And it's the old story, isn't it? But the other thing that, I mean, I suppose you must have been what other people might call a functioning alcoholic or something of that type of description, because it would never have dawned on me when I was in your presence that you had this challenge. On the other hand, it did dawn on me many a time that if I was going to do something like what you're doing, you know, let's go away and cycle the Tour de France together, or let's walk the Great Wall of China or something, you'd be the sort of guy I'd love to do it with, because I'm pretty sure that every night after a meal we'd have a decent drink together and probably enjoy one another's company. And that just, you always came across to me as somebody I would love to journey with. And we would have great fun, because I'm not like you. I don't have an issue with alcohol, but I do enjoy drinking it from time to time, especially if there's a group of people and having a laugh. But there you were, you all the time. I wasn't aware of that, so I can only imagine a lot of your colleagues over the years really weren't aware of what you were having to deal with, and yet still producing fantastic results. But do you think you did what a lot of people seem to have to do? Did you reach a kind of gutter position, or do you not quite get that far before you fought round and said enough's enough?
So it's an interesting one, because a lot of people talk about rock bottom and things like that. And for me, I got to a place where I would say enough's enough, and I was just not comfortable. And that's one thing I've learned is, you know, we're all different when it comes to all these kind of things. And some people can drink 2 glasses of wine a day and be really uncomfortable with that. And there'll be somebody else that'll have 10 pints a night and they don't think it's a problem. And it's a very kind of personal thing. And you know, I'd lost things along the way for sure. Yeah. You know, relationships and things like that. But no, I mean, I think everybody kind of assumes that for somebody to have a drink problem, you've got to be, you know, kind of lying on a park bench or something like that. And I think there are a lot of people, and actually the people who I'm helping are just, you know, there are an awful lot of busy parents that are just, you know, they'll sit down once the kids have gone to bed and stuff like that, and are just throwing alcohol down the throat just as a way of kind of getting through, and they hate themselves for it. And they're kind of, you know, they'll get up not feeling great the following day, and the cycle begins again. And I think people are saying, God, I wish there was a slightly different reality. But I don't want to, you know, I don't want to go to an AA meeting or something like that, because I don't feel that I'm kind of that far gone. But I don't want to get there, as it were. And I suppose for me, it's a bit more like an early intervention. It was, a lot of it was stimulated by my conversation with my GP, because, you know, if you go to your GP and you want to give up smoking, then there is all manner of resources that are kind of thrown at you. And I went to my GP and they referred me onto an organization, a talking therapies organization. And they said, well, we'll not help you unless you stop drinking first. And I'm like, well, that's a bit like going to the Olympics and, you know, a sprint coach saying, yeah, we'll work with you once you can, you know, get 100 meters down under 10 seconds. Yeah. And for me, I just thought, you know what, I needed a kind of a delete that program, you know, to use your words, kind of moment. And I just thought, this is not helping me. It's holding me back. Yeah. And I've, you know, it had also been there for me. You know, I used phrases like it was an old friend, or it was a warm blanket, or whatever, to kind of get me through tough times. And I now see that that wasn't true, but it was just, for me, it was a kind of a personal realization. I just thought, enough's enough. And I wanted to make a change. And I'm grateful for the fact that the kind of inspiration came. And it seems to work for other people as well, which is, you know, which is a lovely thing.
I think it's wonderful. You know, you don't have to go through something like what you've gone through. But yeah, I was coaching someone earlier on today, and it's just about that realization of where your passion is.
Yeah.
Finding where your passion is, and then deciding to ride your passion out, to focus on that area in your career or your business or whatever, and not to stay on the path you're on. Life is far too precious, and obviously it's far too short. You know, delete that program, but we all know what I mean. Time's flying by. You can live 100 years and it still fly by. The truth is that, you know, spending your time doing what you're really, really good at and what you're, where your passion is where the magic is in life. And I mean, I can only imagine, knowing you the way I do, and I don't know you that well, you're just someone that comes to courses and we've worked together, but in a project. But the thing is, it must be wonderful for people to just have time with you and to, for you to share. And I'm assuming you really enjoy doing it, and you're getting feedback that's proving that it's working.
One of the lovely things, and it's a very common thing, and I think it's not just applicable to alcohol at all. I mean, yeah. It's interesting, just any kind of personal changes. I quite often use the example of the film Slumdog Millionaire. I don't know if you've seen that one,
yeah,
Jack.
Very good, yeah.
Yeah, and just, you know, everybody's got a past and everybody's got a journey, and you know, and it's all okay. And what I found was that everything I'd learned, everything that you taught me, everything I'd learned, even, you know, courses I'd been on, yeah, with work around coaching, yeah, and things like that, everything brought me to this point. And all of a sudden, the kind of stars aligned, and I thought, yeah, this is maybe why I was put on this planet, was to deploy these skills and this learning, yeah, in this way. And it is such a joy, you know, it's a joy to get the feedback that I do from people, but it's just a joy to be part of that journey. You know, when somebody says to me, I had an email from a lady this morning. She said, she's fairly, you know, recent on the program. She said, this is the first time I've had 2 weeks without alcohol. And she said, I don't feel like I'm out of the woods at all, but I've never had 2 weeks off that I can remember. Okay. And I'm enjoying it. I'm feeling, yeah, the benefits of it. And she's kind of into that 100-day support phase now. And she's like, I'm really sorry for bothering you. And I just spent a whole load of time emailing her back saying, look, you are not bothering me. You know, you are inspiring me, and you're kind of helping me. The very fact that I'm talking about it now, you know, might just trigger one person who goes, you know what, actually, I thought I couldn't get to grips with this. Maybe I will kind of seek some help or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, I think there are two sides of it. There's the joy of seeing the joy other people get, but there's, yeah, just, there is something about being on purpose, I think, that genuinely is an incredible thing, and I really, you know, love it. It's you know, I could make a lot more money, let's be clear, if I was working in a, you know, a corporate role, yeah, but this satisfies you in a way that no pay packet ever could.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's a great lesson here. I always, when having these conversations, and pick out some lessons for the listener. I've known you for different things you've attempted to do. You know, you've set up, yeah, businesses, and you've gone after. And you and I talked about a project together at one point, and you did quite a bit of work on that on your own. You went off and had a go. The truth is that with programming, you know, we find ourselves working our goals, and you would have done the 7-goal type thing and all that. And you would program, and off you went. And I'd pick up your passion when you would phone me, or I'd meet you or whatever, and you're on the next phase, whatever you were doing. And the great lesson for everyone here is that, you know, when you program and you get out on the road towards a goal, if it's not the right goal for you, it kind of shows up in its own way, but you don't take it as a defeat. That because you've got momentum,
yeah,
it's something else quite quickly, or even as you're traveling towards the end of that road, suddenly you become aware of it. And then because you've got the momentum, you find yourself moving on into the next one. And as you've rightly said, you then push, and I know you've done this, you've pushed in a completely different direction, let's say, business-wise, and, yep, and it's not worked out either, but there you've got even more momentum. As you've said repeatedly today, you've got the experience. It's as if it was all coming together, designed for one reason, to finally, once the source, whatever it is, seems to realise, look, you've got enough lessons now, we know that you're the kind of guy it's going to see through. Now we'll reveal to you what it is, yep, you've actually got to do.
Yep.
And there you are. You're pretty certain now that you're absolutely on it. And one would imagine, well, just from what you're saying, I'm sure the listener can hear it, you not only think you're on the right road, but you're getting feedback that you absolutely are.
Yes, and that is a great, you know, place to be. I mean, when I set up the program, I was very interested to see what other people's experience would be, because I think everything we've talked about is, you know, we're operating in a very kind of personal space here in terms of, you know, we all have different challenges in our life. As you said, you know, people would look at me and, you know, say, oh, look at this successful guy running international companies and all this kind of stuff. And nobody really understands what kind of everybody's got on their plate. Yeah. And we all deal with it in different ways. But, you know, to kind of get something which seems to be, and I think, you know, a lot of what you talk about with MindStore, you know, these are kind of universal truths, and they apply in any area if you choose to apply them. Yeah. And, you know, things like tapping and, you know, just the whole mindfulness and meditation and alpha and things like that. Yeah. It just, you know, it's like gravity. It just works. Yeah. And or it only works. And, you know, that is a very pleasing and quite, you know, it's a strong affirmation of the power of this stuff that you see it applying in different ways. But I've had many successes and also many failures as well behind me as well, and you know, I think one of the things that I've learned over the years of the various different things that you've taught me has been that, you know, what is it they say, you know, success isn't permanent and failure isn't fatal. Yeah. That you do just dust yourself off and you keep going, and you find that kind of mental resilience within yourself to take the lesson and move on.
Yeah, and this whole thing about it's not the destination, it's the journey, and all that type of thing people say, but it's actually very, very true. Because one of the other things about, you mentioned, and I was grateful for you earlier on in this conversation, about when you won your award and you're standing there and suddenly the realization that you've manifested your program. And yet these things, whilst they're awesome in the moment, can soon become anticlimaxes. Because after, it's like, well, because it's gone, you can't live it again, that moment's passed. And now you face a future and you got to pick yourself up and go again. Or at least that's the theory, get yourself out of another comfort zone into a new plateau. And what I love about you, Andy, is that I just witnessed you doing that lots of times, not always succeeding, but ultimately succeeding, because you only learn from risking. I mean, just imagine you sat back all those years and didn't do any of those things. You wouldn't have had the experience you've got now. And most importantly, you wouldn't have had the experience to help the people who desperately need your help now and who are gaining from that experience.
I remember waking up one morning after putting away a liter of gin. And you know, again, growing up in a small Scottish island, you know, that is, you get high fives from people for doing that. You know? You know, part of me actually felt a bit proud that I'd done it and lived. But part of me just went, hey, you know, what you've done is really silly. You know, you've really danced with the devil there. Yeah. And yes, you know, I use that example to a lot of people, and it's almost my kind of credentials in a way. And it's, I've done some really stupid stuff. Yeah. And I've been there, and people who are in a kind of a dark place, you know, it's all I can offer them is that, look, you know, there is a future. There is, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. Amazing. And I am a few steps ahead of you. And I just reach my hand out and take my hand, and I'll, you know, lead you to the light. But it's been very interesting. And just going back to your comment around the anticlimax and things like that. I mean, what I was kind of alluding to when we were talking about before with the boardroom. And I went into the morning after. I had a stinking hangover, I remember. I'd spent the whole night after the award getting high fives and congratulations and a glass of champagne and all this kind of stuff. And I went out into Hyde Park because the event was in London. I got into Alpha and I went around my boardroom and received all the congratulations from various different people that I have in there. And I got to my higher self, and they were the last one at the end of the table. And I said, I was waiting for the reaction. I was waiting for the congratulations. And it was like looking in a mirror, and they just said, happy now, move on. Aye. And I was shocked. And I think that is, for me, is the power of this thing. You know, it's kind of, it was, winning the award was just a kind of a confirmation of stuff that I really kind of needed to just leave behind. You know, it's like, okay, yes, you're good at this, right? We've proven it to you. Get on with the rest of your life. And sometimes, you know, you don't necessarily get that kind of feedback unless you can do it through through Alpha.
Yeah. Well, Andy, as inevitably happens with these things, that's nearly an hour zipped past. So, I mean, just a coincidence that you're just mentioned a couple of times today, Shetland, and we're watching the series on television again. The sort of Dour Copper up there on the islands of Shetland. Do you follow that by any chance?
I do, and most of my friends and family are in it as extras. So, it's quite funny. And if there's anybody from Shetland that's listening to this, they'll probably laugh along with me at this. It's social media is always ablaze after an episode about how they've got on this ferry, but they've got off on that island and kind of thing. And, you know, it's like, look, it's not a documentary, you know, it's, but yes, I hope people are enjoying it. It's a very, very special place to call home and to have grown up, and a very energizing place. I love to take my children there now, and it's really great. And when I did the island as a boy who grew up on a small island of 7 miles by 3, there were lots of things that I found emotionally very powerful when we were doing that.
I can only imagine. Anyway, it's a wonderful series. I've enjoyed every one of them. Not just the fact that the story and the actors are playing their roles and all that. I think I've always got I've got a soft spot for Scotland. Obviously, I've got a soft spot for that type of, environment and islands. I just love islands. That's why we obviously got into that. But no, I've never been. But I just identify with it, almost immediately attached to it. And I'm sure people from big cities across the UK and elsewhere in the world look at it and possibly yearn to just go and experience that for a little while. But I like all the scenery of the sort of wind-blown, torn bin bag on the sort of the barbed wire and stuff. You get that sense of desolation as well.
Yeah, there's plenty of that. But people often say, is it a lovely place? And I say, yeah, it's a really lovely place on a fine day.
Yes, let's not talk about Scotland and fine days. Beautiful part of the world, wonderful, but you can meet all seasons in one day, anywhere in that wonderful part of the world. But listen, again, I really appreciate you giving me the time. I'm sure people who have listened to us blathering have enjoyed it. And I'm sure on their behalf, you'll accept that. I wish you every success for what you're doing, not just for yourself and how that feeds into your spirit and your being and having a purpose, but for all the people who are going to benefit from your experience, the ones that have already and the ones that surely will. I can wish you only all the very, very best, Andy. So thanks for helping us today.
Thank you very much, Jack. I really appreciate it.
Cheers, buddy. Thank you.
All the best.
Bye-bye.